May it please the court, counsel, members of the Ibrahim family, I'm John Zuloff, and I'm here on behalf of Mohammed Ibrahim. Let me start.
Would you like to save any time for rebuttal?
No. Oh. Let me start by noting the Ibrahim family is here. There are young children in the courtroom. It doesn't affect me, but if the court would like the children to step out, we can ask them to do that.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. Good morning. I want to just address two issues this morning. Did Judge Ramsdell abuse his discretion in granting a mistrial over the objections of Mr. Ibrahim and his counsel? And did that violate Ibrahim's double jeopardy rights? And second, I want to talk about the issue of whether Judge Downing abused his discretion by refusing to issue a material witness warrant for Barkat Kabedi, and did that violate Mr. Ibrahim's right to compulsory process? We're not abandoning the other issues. I just want to focus on those two for now. I should also note that I seem to have a sore throat, and so my voice is breaking as a result of that. I apologize. Regarding the first issue, did Judge Ramsdell abuse his discretion by declaring a mistrial over the objection of the defendant, Mr. Ibrahim, and did that violate his double jeopardy rights? I want to just start with the basic facts. The shooting occurred in May 2013.
Before you do that, as I understand it, the resolution of this issue turns on whether there was a manifest necessity.
I think that's right. The trial of the case didn't start for more than 6 months. It started with opening statements on December 4th. And it continued until the judge declared a mistrial on December 17th. There were two prosecutors assigned to this case, Julie Klein and Paul Sewell. And I want to note that Mr. Sewell played a significant role in the prosecution of this case. He gave the opening statement. He examined at least 10 of the witnesses. He argued the jury instructions. He was prepared to give closing argument if Julie Klein was unavailable. And there was good reason to believe that Julie Klein might be unavailable because she announced before trial that she would be leaving on vacation on December 18th, 2013. In that event, the only person left to try the case and to conclude the case would have been Mr. Sewell. There was good reason to suspect that this might happen because the trial started much later than anticipated. The prosecutor had listed some 38 witnesses, and there was a very narrow period of time for them to then try this case, really only a few days. The case was originally set for October 28th, I believe. The prosecutor obtained at least 9 continuances, and that pushed the trial date very close to Julie Klein's vacation date. She knew that, and yet the prosecutor didn't ask for a continuance of the trial date until after her vacation.
Well, don't we also have the dynamic of the concern, as expressed by Judge Ramsdale, related to the jurors? Jury selection, I assume, would have involved questioning as to hardship because the case could have impacted the scheduled holiday season, which always happens when you're trying a case in December.
It was on December 17th that he declared the mistrial.
But he says affirmative representations have been made to the jury at the outset of trial, and I assume that relates to how long the judge and the parties anticipated the case would take. And if you back up, that also relates to the hardship questioning of the jury and jurors, potential jurors, and determining whether you had a panel that could be there for this period of time, but probably not for longer.
First, the record isn't clear on that. Second, the judge didn't then go ask the jurors whether or not they could stay for a few more days. He didn't question them. He didn't, at the urging of the prosecutor, who had gone to their appellate unit and said, you know, does this create double jeopardy problems if the judge grants a mistrial? The appellate unit of the King County Prosecutor's Office essentially said, yes, you should be asking the jurors if they can stay longer or if they can come back at a later date, if they can come back on January 14th, and Judge Ramsdale refused to do that.
And that was the question of polling. So what the state said is, we've checked with our appellate unit, and you need to be careful, and you should poll the jury, and Judge Ramsdale rejected that request.
Well, I think what the prosecutor was coming back and saying is, you need to be more careful. You need to look at the alternatives before you declare a mistrial. And Judge Ramsdale simply didn't do that. He didn't poll the jury. He didn't ask whether or not the prosecutor could come back in 1 day or 2 days and complete the trial. There was nothing that suggested that if he had gone to these jurors and said, could you come back in 2 days, they might have said, yes, of course we can.
But isn't the premise of that argument that it was only going to be a short recess? And as I read the record, the recess would entail more than 2 days.
But that's not clear, because he didn't really go to the prosecutor and say, what is it that you're going to do with this recess? How many witnesses are you going to need to bring in? What is it that you're going to try and find out that you don't already know? The record is clear that they had an extensive interview with this witness, and that revealed a number of issues. It wasn't clear why the prosecutor needed more than a day to investigate this. It wasn't, Judge Ramsdale really didn't ask, why can't you be ready in 2 days? I would submit that I've tried a lot of cases in Superior Court. Most judges would say that if a witness appeared late, that the defense lawyer or the prosecutor can take a few minutes and talk to them if they need to. In rare cases, they say, okay, we'll recess for an hour or two to let you talk to these witnesses.
Well, that happened.
In this case, what the defense lawyers were saying is, there's no reason we couldn't finish this case in the next couple of days. And the judge simply didn't explore that possibility. And really what was going on is, he wanted to let Julie Klein go on her vacation. She was going to be married in early January, and she had announced that, and he just simply decided that he wanted to let her go, is the reading I take from this. It's significant.
And what exactly are you pointing to? Because that's not reflected in the court's ruling on the 17th.
Well, on the 17th, the judge says, look, you had made clear that you wanted to be off on your vacation on the 18th. That was something that the judge noted on December 17th is that the prosecutor had said repeatedly that she wanted to be off and on her vacation by the 18th. Your Honor, the point of all this is that the circumstances that arose here were not surprising, really, for anyone. The prosecutor knew about this vacation that was coming up. The prosecutor knew that Burkett Kabeti could be a witness at trial. They had notice of that for the last 6 months that he was potentially a witness at trial. The prosecutor, even at that first trial, contemplated adding a count relative to Burkett Kabeti. So it's not, none of this was a surprise. If you look at State versus Jones at 97 Washington 2nd, it says that before the judge even exercises discretion, there has to be a finding of extraordinary and striking circumstances. I would argue there weren't extraordinary and striking circumstances here. Everyone knew about the facts that came up, that there was a witness who might testify, and that this trial was being pushed against Julie Klein's vacation date. The judge simply didn't explore the options here, and because of that, abused his discretion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, I'm James Westman, appearing on behalf of the State of Washington. We ask the court to affirm the convictions. The standard I'm sure the court is generally familiar with, but I want to emphasize that the standard review on appeal is abuse of discretion, and so the question is whether this judge made a ruling that no reasonable judge would have done and would have made. And secondly, as to this double jeopardy question in particular, the case law says that the trial court should not act in a precipitate or unreasoning fashion, and that the appellate court is to consider whether everybody was allowed to explain their positions and the options that were available to the judge, whether the judge considered those options and the importance of the defendant's right to a single proceeding, and fully explored the alternatives that were available to the court.
And what case are you citing?
That's Melton. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
All right. And the argument is the court did not explore the options.
That's right. And I think that what counsel is conflating is rejecting options with failure to explore options. The court explored all the options that were on the table here. But let me first note that nobody suggested the option that Paul Sewell, who had only had one felony trial in his experience, and that's in the declaration of Julia Klein at CPA, I think 65.
But that came later. That came later. That was when the motion was made in front of Judge
Downey. That's correct.
So let's go back with Judge Ramsdale, because as I read the record, Judge Ramsdale was he did express an overarching concern about the jury and what the jury had been told. And so
that's as to the January 14th continuance, correct?
Yes.
And I'll note that
both
lawyers rejected that option. And if you look at, I'm going to cite to the RP from the consecutively numbered volume. I know there are two here.
Yeah, which one are you citing to?
To the consecutively numbered. That's Ibrahim's.
Ibrahim?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe it's page 1487, the court says directly to Mr. Jerzyk, who is Shire's counsel,
right.
So what's your thoughts on the recess until January 14th? Jerzyk replies, I think I'm left in a position to object. As to St. Clair, who's the attorney for Mr. Ibrahim, the court says, what do you think about the recess perhaps until January 14th? She says, I do have a quarrel. That's at 1488. And then she says, but to have a two-week break, I think it's more of a problem. So, yes, I would object. Yeah, it's actually more than 2 weeks. It's more like a month, and that's a problem. That's at 1489. So it's clear that the defense counsel took that option off the table for the judge. Now, the judge had his own reasons for not wanting to do that. I think they were valid reasons. But so then we're left.
Wait, and so what were those reasons?
His reasons were, first, that given the somewhat tumultuous trial and the recalcitrant witnesses, et cetera, it would be very difficult for the jury to come back a month later and assess the credibility of the witnesses and the evidence that had been delivered. He also was concerned, and Mr. Jerzyk joined in this consideration, that the jury would understand that they'd been forced to come back a month later just because this witness showed up at the last minute. That was all going to be aired if Mr. Khabibi took the stand.
And do you think, two questions. One, do you think that the schedule of Julie Klein entered into this decision?
Well,
and then secondly, there is reference to the advice of the appellate unit.
Yes. Let me take the first question first. What Judge Ramsdale never said that, and so you'd have to be guessing that he based his decision on that. What he said was, I'm going to hold to the mistrial, and I don't think jeopardy attaches because, in essence, it was a late disclosed defense witness that necessitated the mistrial, and I will find manifest necessity for all the reasons I've said. That's at pages 1500.
But then for all the reasons I've said, then you have to go back and look at everything else he said.
That's right, as he's discussing the alternatives that were proposed and then rejected. So, again, he's not acting precipitously. The advice that was mentioned in court, and frankly, I have no memory of whether or not I was a part of that. The advice that was mentioned in court seems to be make sure the judge considers the alternative. Explore alternatives, which included, can this trial be continued until the date on January 14th?
Well, it was more specific than that. It was poll the jury.
That's right. And I think that would have been a reasonable thing to do. But what Judge Ramsdale responded is that for the reasons that he was looking at, he did not want to go to the trouble of polling the jury, not just the trouble, but he felt that it would be coercive and intimidating to the jury to have him ask them to come back a month later after they'd already said that he'd already promised them that they were going to be done in mid-December and they were beyond the promised date, apparently. He just didn't feel that was appropriate. That's within his discretion to do so, especially when you look at the underlying reasons for his reluctance to continue this case until January 14th. But what he was focusing on, I think quite properly, and what Judge Downing focused on also when he considered this issue later, was the fact that both defendants knew about this witness, whereas the state didn't even know his name. Both defendants knew about this witness for months preceding trial, and the lawyer the defense lawyer, Jerzyk, knew about it for a week preceding the trial. Mr. Jerzyk had legitimate reasons for trying to decide how to play his cards in that regard because he wanted to find out what implications would this have for my client. I want to fully advise my client. That's fine. But it's a two-edged sword. When he's making those calculations, he also knows that there's a hard finish date of December 17th. And he decided to play his cards close to his chest and hopefully probably to gain a tactical advantage in depriving us from gathering and presenting the impeachment evidence that we would have against Khabibi. So
Does the record in any way reflect that could have been accomplished in a two-day period?
The record reflects that it could not have been. Both Judge Downing and Judge Ramsdale felt that way, and Judge Ramsdale had presided over the whole trial. The reason is you have a witness who had been shot at, and now was going to come in and say, I was shot at, I know these two gentlemen, they were not the people who shot at me. Now, we didn't even know that person's name up until the December 17th date when defense counsel disclosed him. So,
yeah, but then there was the interview, and
there was an interview, yes.
And then during the interview, it was disclosed that there had been telephone conversations while,
yes.
I think it was Mr. Shire was in jail. And
within 10 days of charging, Mr. Shire and Khabibi were talking on the phone. Within 18 days of charging, Mr. Ibrahim and Mr. Khabibi were talking on the phone. Mr. Khabibi had been in court on December 5th and watched testimony, and neither defendant had said anything about it. Defense counsel had held on to this information for a week. If defense counsel, when he first learned of this witness, had said, I'm not sure whether we want this witness, I'm not sure what we're going to do about it, but because time is short, I'm going to tell you people this person is now available. In that week, maybe we could have done what we needed to do. But he chose to play those cards close to his chest, and I think what the judge is saying here, and it's a reasonable exercise of discretion, some other judges might have done it slightly differently, but it's a reasonable exercise of discretion. The judge said, this late disclosed witness put everybody in a position where there are only bad alternatives. And so now I've got to choose between about five bad alternatives. Counsel, you're telling me you don't want the January 14th alternative. You don't want me to bar the witness, which is another alternative. And it's not enough to do this in 2 days. Remember, 2 days, this was a Tuesday. 2 days would be Wednesday and Thursday. Court's not in session on Friday. And then you'd have to start perhaps maybe on the next Monday, which is 3 days before Christmas, we have no idea whether the jurors would be available even on that date. So I think that the judge was appropriately responding to the fact that the defendants had created this situation, put the court in a very bad position, and the best option, the most fair option, seemed to be to grant a mistrial, and that's what the judge did. That's well within his discretion, and for that reason, his ruling should be affirmed. Unless that court has any questions, I'll conclude for this case.
All right. Thank you.